You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by TechServe. TechServe is New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving individual customers, creative professionals, and Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation on its expertise in technology, sales, and service. As a company that believes in honest and forthright business practices, TechServe is proud to sponsor Heritage Radio Network in the promotion of sustainable lifestyles. Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Erica Weitz, sitting here behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick on a beautiful spring night, late spring. It's almost the first day of summer. And there's lots of people out here in the garden eating pizza and having fun. It's a nice night. So I was shopping at Trader Joe's the other day. There's a Trader Joe's near me in Brooklyn. And as usual, I had to wait in a very long line to check out. There's always long lines at Trader Joe's to check out. But there's very nice people who work there who are very efficient. And they do a really good job of keeping that line moving fast. But there is always a wait unless you go at very odd hours. But I don't really mind the waiting so much because as I wait in line, I get to indulge my voyeuristic tendencies, which is looking at other people's food baskets and food carts and seeing what they're buying. It's like the anthropologist in me. I like to see what people buy. I find it really fascinating and often repelling and infuriating also to see what people are actually spending their food dollars on. Not so much at a, you know, PC temple like Trader Joe's, but more at like your big basic suburban supermarket or city supermarket where you actually have to do a hunt for edible food. You actually have to like look around the perimeter of the store to find real food. The things that people buy is truly amazing. The things that people will spend their food dollars on that they consider food is just incredible. It's the, like Michael Pollan calls it, the food-like edible substances that people eat. And I like to spy on their carts or their little shopping baskets and think about what motivates them to buy what they buy. At Trader Joe's, they certainly sell their share of processed and packaged foods. I mean, more, I think, than even most stores. But a lot of what they sell there sort of has a health halo around it. A lot of the stuff's organic. They don't use preservatives, artificial colors. I mean, I think their quality is better, even though it's still packaged, processed food. And I think if you're going to eat that kind of stuff, pre-made packaged stuff, at least buying it at Trader Joe's is good because it's better quality and they use a lot less chemicals. And I think they're a more ethical company, although I don't know. The only thing that I ever really buy there are dairy products because I really like their house brand Greek yogurt and I like to buy my organic milk from them. And I also like to buy their frozen mixed berries. They're really good in the morning. And once in a while, I'll buy frozen whole wheat pizza dough that they sell. It's also very good. I use it to make pizza on the grill when I'm up in the country. It's got nothing bad in it. And sometimes I don't want to mix up my own dough. But anyway, I have a point, of course. The other day, I was online and I was playing my voyeuristic games. And I looked down and the woman online in front of me had a basket and she had two things in her basket. One was a box of packets of pre-cooked oatmeal and one was a box with packets of pre-cooked brown rice. Pre-cooked oatmeal and pre-cooked rice. What's going on in this world? Am I the crazy one? Is it that hard to cook rice or oatmeal? I thought that instant oatmeal and minute rice were ridiculous enough, but pre-cooked rice and oatmeal in little packages that you put in the microwave and heat up. Is this something like, should I not be surprised by this? I don't know. I saw an ad for the Uncle Ben's version of the pre-cooked rice on the subway the other day too, and I thought, oh God, nobody could be buying that. Who would buy frozen pre-cooked microwavable rice? And then I thought, okay, well, at least people are spending their money on that as opposed to spending their money on like French fries. But what really gets me with this stuff is the waste factor of it all, the sheer waste of it, the energy that's required to cook this rice in a factory, then cool it down, then package it, use machinery to package it in little individual plastic packets, then put it in boxes, then put those boxes on pallets, then wrap that all in plastic, then ship that all over the country so some lazy person can tear it open, throw out the box and the packaging, and put it in their microwave and heat it up. It's a bit much for me. Now, I know I'm a little sanctimonious about this stuff because I'm a chef and I don't have kids and blah, blah, blah. But really, people, pre-cooked rice, pre-cooked oatmeal, is there something wrong with me? Because I think there's a problem with this. Because you can let me know. You can write to me, Why We Cook on Facebook, or leave a comment on the radio station website. I mean, is there something wrong with me? Am I not getting this? So at my local health food store in Brooklyn, where I buy stuff in bulk, you can buy bulk organic rolled oats and brown rice, and they're both about $1.50 a pound, $1.59 a pound. And all you do is fill up one big plastic bag. So you have one little plastic bag for packaging, and you're getting the stuff for $1.59. And then you can make that in the microwave. You can make oats. That's what I do. Put it in a glass bowl, not in some BPA-laden plastic packaging. And the rice, I put in a little tiny rice cooker, and I add some water, and then boom, you have rice. It's not that hard. So when I teach my classes at ICE, because I'm a chef instructor at ICE in Manhattan, and we have to make rice in class, we always do it in a pot. We actually teach people to cook rice in pots, the way people have been doing it for millennia. You know, even before the rice cooker was invented, people were cooking rice in pots. And I would have to say that almost every single time, somebody screws it up. What's wrong with us? Why are we Americans so inept when it comes to cooking rice? A simple, staple food. We can't even cook it in a pot. 3/4 of the world's population eats rice 3 times a day. I actually was looking it up today, and rice provides more than 1/5 of the calories consumed worldwide by humans daily. So 20% of all the food eaten on the planet every day is rice. That's really unbelievable. That's a lot of freaking rice. Can you imagine if they all started buying their rice in packets of pre-cooked rice? We would be buried alive in the packaging waste. Let's hope that Uncle Ben's never makes it to China, because that'll be the end. So anyway, seeing that shopping basket with the pre-cooked rice obviously had some kind of traumatic effect on me. It's like when I see the frozen pre-cooked pancakes or frozen pre-cooked scrambled eggs in supermarkets, it kind of freaks me out and makes me think that we have lost touch so much with cooking that the end is quite near and these are our last days. I mean, here in Brooklyn, it's different because this is the land of the artisanal and the do-it-yourself and the handmade. And, you know, God forbid you should buy anything in a package because someone will jump all over you. Someone like me, maybe. But out there in the non-artisanal world, there's a big, huge freezer section in the supermarket. And it's insidiously lurking, filled with these convenience products, making people think that the cost of the ease outweighs the cost of quality or the true cost of the food. So I looked up this Uncle Ben's pre-cooked microwavable rice on Amazon. I didn't look up the Trader Joe's. I like Trader Joe's, and I don't understand why they're doing this, but I know they have to do it. So I looked it up on Amazon, and they sell it in a discounted bulk package, which means you get 8.8-ounce packages of pre-cooked frozen rice for $2.57 a package. So if you do the math, the price on that per pound comes out to almost $6 a pound for rice. $6 a pound for plain old brown rice, not even organic, mainstream quality rice. $6 a pound. For the convenience of 90 seconds of cooking in a toxic plastic bag versus the drudge of paying $1.59 a pound for organic rice and putting it in a rice cooker and cooking it and learning how to do something. So obviously this has affected me. I'm trying to recover from this trauma of realizing that people are buying pre-cooked frozen packages of rice. We're going to take a little break. I'll try to calm myself down here. When we come back, we're actually going to talk about cooking rice. So we'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by TechServe. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And I just took a bite of arugula pizza, so I'm still chewing a little bit. Excuse me, it's kind of rude. Anyway, so in the first segment, I was talking about how mortified and appalled I was because I saw people buying packages of pre-cooked, frozen, microwavable rice in the store. And so now, instead of just sitting here being sanctimonious and ranting and raving, what I want to talk about is rice and how to cook it. Okay, I'm finished with the rant for the night. Let's talk about the difference in cooking techniques of a few different rice dishes, specifically risotto and pilafs, because they all start out the same, but then they take very, very different paths. The paths diverge. And the reason I started thinking about this is because last night I went out to dinner and I had paella. We went out for paella. And it was really, really good paella. And it was at a tiny little restaurant here in New York in Chelsea called Socarrat. And this name Socarrat refers to the crunchy crust of rice that clings to the bottom of the paella pan after the rice is cooked. The rice gets cooked in this very shallow pan that it looks sort of like a wok paella pan. And it's cast iron and it heats up really nicely. And the rice crusts on the bottom, and after the rice gets cooked, you let it sit for 3 minutes. We used a timer. And if you let it sit for those 3 minutes before you eat it, the socarrat will form on the bottom. And then when you get down to the bottom, after you eat the nice, soft, delicious rice, you can scrape up the socarrat from the bottom. And it's this like crunchy, crusty, charred rice crust on the bottom. And I think it's really the best part of the dish. There are Iraqi and Persian rice dishes like this too, where the rice is cooked specifically so that a crust forms on the bottom of the pot. And then when you eat it with people, they all fight over the crust at the bottom. And I actually come to think of it, a lot of rice eating cultures do the same thing. They cook the rice until a crust forms on the bottom and then everybody fights over it. So why are we even cooking the soft part of the rice? Why not just cook big pots of crusty rice? Just cook your rice like in a sheet pan so it turns into one big crust. Why not? But anyway, so I had this paella last night and it was great. And yesterday during the day, before I went out for dinner, I was teaching a class and we were making risotto. And I had to taste all 16 of them and critique them. And so I had 16 risottos during the day. And then we went out for paella for dinner last night. And I ate way too much of the paella. And then today in class, we had to make rice pilaf. So, and I had to taste all of those. So I've been kind of thinking about rice a lot, and especially rice techniques in the past couple of days. And I wanted to sort of narrow it down to like some of the major factors because, you know, we Americans, we suck at cooking rice. We can't do it, which is why people buy the pre-cooked, frozen, microwavable rice. And even if you're not going to use your rice cooker, or even if you do use a rice cooker, there are other ways of cooking rice too that don't involve a rice cooker. And that's where you want to infuse rice with flavor or make a specific dish out of the rice, not just cook plain rice as a side dish or as the base of a meal. So with rice cooking, there are three major factors. I was thinking about it today. You have to make three major decisions first. Decision number one is you have to decide what kind of rice you're making, what type. Rices can be very, very generally broken down into medium grain and long grain. Medium grain can also be short grain. There's short/medium, and then there's long grain, or if you want to be technical, Japonica type rices or Indica type rices. Medium and short grain rices, which are Japonica, have a higher amylopectin content. Amylopectin is the starch. There's two starches in rice, amylopectin and amylose. The shorter ones have higher amylopectin. And this is rice that becomes more sticky when you cook it. When heat and water interact with the amylopectin, then it kind of breaks free and dissolves and you get a sticky rice. That's the predominant starch in sticky rices. Long grain rices have a higher amylose content and tend to remain intact after cooking. The rice starch stays inside of the grain, and the grain gets longer instead of getting wider. You get a drier, fluffier result. Medium grain, short grain rices, the stickier ones are used for things like risotto and paella and sushi, where you want some stickiness, you want a little bit of moisture. Long grain rices are what you'd use for pilafs, pilaus, biryanis, those kinds of things. Biryanis, if you don't know, are Indian-style pilaf, rice pilaf dishes. So basically, if you want your rice to be fluffy and dry and you want the individual grains to spring apart, you want long grain. If you want it sticky, creamy, holding together, you want medium or short grain. So that's decision number one, long or short. Decision number two is about fat and whether you add fat to the dish or not. Now, if you're just cooking regular old rice in your rice cooker, your pot, there's no fat involved. But in many rice dishes, you start out by cooking the rice in fat or in oil. And this does a couple things. It toasts the rice a little bit, and it hardens the outer coating of it, the outer layer of starch, so that it actually slows down the absorption rate. This will give you drier, fluffier rice if it's a long grain rice, or creamier, kind of moister rice if it's a short grain rice. So in a pilaf or biryani, which are long grain, the rice is first toasted in fat or oil, then water or stock is added. The rice gets cooked. Same with paella. Toast the rice up, add lots of aromatics, add stock, let it cook. Toasting the rice in fat will also add a little bit more flavor in the beginnings too. And often aromatics are toasted or sauteed at the same time. So in risotto making, you'd first sweat out some shallots or some onions and then add the rice to that. And in pilafs and biryanis, you do the same thing, but you'd also toast like spices, nuts, raisins, other aromatics in butter. Then add the rice to that, sweat out the rice, then add liquid. So in both of them, liquid is added after that initial cooking in fat period. And the liquid should always be hot. You never want to add cold liquid. The liquid should be boiling hot. Because if you add cold liquid to the pot, you'll actually arrest the cooking process. You'll stop it and you'll congeal the fat onto the rice. Then it'll take the rice longer to cook and you'll overcook it. Okay? So now you've made the first two decisions. And now you come to the third decision. This is the crucial one. This is the make it or break it moment. And this you can't, there's really no deciding. This is just a hard and fast rule you need to know. You need to know, based on what you're making and what kind of rice it is, whether you stir or you don't stir. There's no guesswork here. You need to know that the only rice dish you stir is risotto. No other rice gets stirred. If you stir long grain rices, you get a big pile of sticky mush. If you stir risotto, you get nice, creamy, smooth, saucy rice. Now, the only exception to this is rice pudding, which you do stir, but that's a whole other show. We're not talking about that tonight. So in making risotto, the rice, which is a special type of medium grain rice, it's a cultivar of that Japonica rice that comes from Italy and is called Arborio or Carnaroli or Vialone Nano, is first sweated in some oil or some butter, again, with onions or shallots or any other aromatics. And then you add some wine and you let the wine evaporate out, and then you start adding the liquid. But the liquid in this case gets added slowly. In a pilaf, you dump it all in, bring it to a boil, cover it, and cook it. In this, you add the liquid in small additions. And every time you add liquid, you stir, 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 stir in between. That stirring is what makes risotto a risotto, because in that stirring process, what you're doing is putting the rice grains in motion and you're creating friction. And that friction causes those rice grains to bash up against each other and the starch molecules start to dissolve and come out into the hot liquid. And that's what gives you the creaminess in a risotto. That's where like the sauce of a risotto comes from. So a properly made risotto should be creamy and loose, but not liquidy. And it should have enough creamy looseness to it that when you put it in a bowl, it shouldn't just sit there. It should actually move. And in Italy, they say it should be al onda, like the waves. It should flow like the waves of the sea. And it's going to take you at least 20 minutes of constant stirring to get there, if not more than that. And when that rice is done, it should add some chew to it. So there's a lot of variables here. There's a lot of stuff you need to stay on top of when you make risotto. You want that rice to be al dente, which means that when you bite into it, it should have a little bit of resistance, but it shouldn't be crunchy. So it's almost like gummy bear rice. You want to bite into it. You want to have to do a little bit of work to push your teeth through it, but it shouldn't have any audible crunch to it. That's how you know that you're in the right place with risotto rice. If you overcook it, it'll be soft. If you undercook, you'll have audible crunch. So you stir and you stir and you stir, and you wind up with this creamy, saucy dish of rice. And then you usually add a little bit of fat at the end, some butter, some Parmesan cheese. Unless, of course, it's a seafood risotto, because in Italy, it is practically a federal offense to ever put cheese on anything seafood. It's like against the law. No cheese with fish. And since risotto should be eaten as a first course in a small amount, it's a rich, filling, creamy thing. So you can add the butter and the cheese, because technically you're only going to be eating a little bowl of it. It's not the American way of let's all strap on the feed bag and step up to the giant bowl and stick our head in. It's like a small first course bowl. Okay, we have to take another break. We will be right back to talk a little bit more about rice. Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by TechServe. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And if you like listening to this show, you should become a fan of the show on Facebook. You can find us at Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network on Facebook. Become a fan. Leave me a message. Let me know you're listening. I'd love to hear from you. You can also leave comments on the HeritageRadioNetwork.com website. You can also listen to any Heritage Radio Network show archived on the website, or listen to a live 24-hour program stream. And if none of that works for you, you can also listen to any of our shows anytime on iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss a single episode of any show that we have on the air. So we were talking about rice tonight because I had this traumatic experience of seeing people buying pre-cooked frozen packages of rice. And so I was talking about how you actually can cook rice on your own. And I'm not really talking about like just putting plain rice in a rice cooker and steaming it and eating it that way, which, I mean, nothing, that's great. If you can do that, that's the beginning. What I'm really talking about tonight is the difference in technique that you use to make specific rice dishes like pilafs or paella or risotto. And so we were covering these three major decisions you have to make. Type of rice, first of all. than whether you cook the rice in some fat first and then whether you stir. And the only one that you stir, of course, is risotto, because that's what gives you that creamy texture. If you took any other kind of rice and stirred it, you'd wind up with a big pot of glue. It wouldn't be good. And so you never want to stir. You also, when you cook rice, never want to peek. You always cook them covered, obviously, except not risotto, because you can't stir it. But everything else that you cook covered, you never, ever peek. So when you're making dishes like a pilaf or a biryani or paella, you want them to have kind of that lighter, springier, drier texture. And that's partially why you don't stir, because you don't want to develop any starchy creaminess in there. But you want the rice to have that lighter, drier kind of spring apart texture to it. And the covering it will create steam. And the steam will force that rice to absorb moisture and then kind of spring apart. So each grain fluffs apart from each other. Not as much in paella, but more in like a pilaf or a pilau or a plov. They're all the same thing, different name. Or biryani. You want to cover so that the rice really has time to slowly absorb all of that moisture. And then you usually take it off the heat, but you leave it covered and you let it sit for 10 minutes. And that's 10 minutes of steaming time is crucial, because that's when things really start to happen in there. That's when the rice comes into its own and each grain will pop away from the other grains. And one time years ago, I took a class with Elizabeth Ando, who's a Japanese, she's Japanese-American food writer, but she lives in Japan. And she said that when she was a little girl growing up in Japan, there was an ad on the radio for some, it was for a rice cooker or for rice or something. And there was a jingle that she sang to us in Japanese, which of course I can't remember and I can't repeat. But basically the gist of the jingle was about how to properly cook rice. And it said that even if your children are crying with hunger and begging you for food, you must never, ever open the lid of the rice while it's cooking. You never peek, because you should not serve your children improperly cooked rice. It's better that they go hungry. Sounds very Japanese to me. Sounds very draconian. Here we would just open a package of frozen pre-cooked microwavable rice and serve it to them. That way we'd probably put Cool Whip on it or something like that. Anyway, I'm still kind of full from last night's paella, which I ate too much of, especially all that crunchy bit on the bottom, the sokerat. So I'm going to roll myself out of here tonight and probably walk home the 4 miles, because I need to burn off all those rice carbs that I ingested last night. And we are just about out of time. I want to say thank you for listening to the show this week. And thanks to Nat and Jack in the control room for always making the show sound great. I'd love to hear from you. Become a fan of the show, and we'll see you next week.